another vision of us. We were the challengers of the unknown.
Bienvenue to I Don't Get It, the pop culture get off my lawn cast. This show features the open-minded musings of two late 40s curmudgeons staring at the prospect of entertainment relevance. I am your co-host, Bill Scurry of American Caesar Enterprises, which is the preferred supplier of half-sour and garlic dill pickles to all outlets in the greater Paramus, New Jersey area.
It's a good one. I like
that. Are you a fan of pickles, by the way?
I wouldn't say I'm a fan of pickles. I will eat a pickle slice.
Yeah?
I've enjoyed it. In my aborted stand-up comedy career, I tried a joke that I don't think ever landed, but most of my jokes didn't land. About like why are pickles cucumbers? Like of all the vegetables you can pickle, how come you don't need to say pickled cucumbers? Just pickle unqualified
right.
Is a cucumber. Why do cucumbers get the primacy of the pickling process?
Right. Not
you understand what I'm saying?
Not cauliflower florets, not radish.
Right. There's an alternate world where pickles are pickled radishes. You can pickle a cucumber, but it's called a pickled cucumber.
Yeah.
Whereas just when you say a pickle, it's understood it's a radish.
Do you remember the big giant plastic barrel with the retractable like plexi hatch on top and you would dig
remember,
in?
Remember, they still have them.
I know, but I mean, I haven't seen one in a good long time. And yeah. I have this Jones, I think it's a
come
full,
back to New York.
I think it's like a full garlic blaster, like a pickle. And I'm like, man, you know, it's like a particular taste that they don't have anything like that over here in Europe. They have pickles. But they're closer to like French cornichons almost. They're like smaller, which again, it's its own pleasure. But the idea of like having a big Jewish honking pickle from the old neighborhood, that's like, man, talk about a pleasure. It's fleeting.
Nothing better than that, right?
It's the unleavened experience of a lifetime, as Billy Crystal once said.
I had a girlfriend once who was deathly afraid of pickles. Like literally, if you're sitting across the table from her, and you have sliced pickles on your plate, she's like, please hide those.
What? I don't understand. It's such a weird, irrational
fear. I think she
had
eaten pickles as a child and thought they were disgusting. And just okay. My mom's that way with beets. I don't think you have to hide them, but like if beets are on her plate, she freaks. And my mom will eat almost anything, but beets drive her nuts.
I wonder if that's like if she was forced to eat beets. Because, you know, that's a real peasant food. You know, it's like, I mean, I like them.
Well, her parents were not peasants. But,
no, that's true. That's true. But it's like shtetl food. It survives through the years. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, beets are now fancy. People are serving them.
They can be.
Anyway, one of these elements of society that I can't decide if it's a sign that we are a great culture or we are a doomed culture is the existence of like going into 7-Eleven and being able to buy in the little fridge case the little single pickle in the bag with the juice.
That's like that's the business of being a debauched king, yeah.
Right. Is that the height of American ingenuity or, you know, proof that, you know, we are doomed and we are a failed.
That's strange. I mean, in some ways, I would say that when you start stuffing pizza into a crust, no, you start stuffing cheese into the crust of a pizza, I should say.
Yeah, that's a sign of the end.
Right. The single bag pickle just strikes me as being extremely inefficient. And like, that is like, oh, what are you, a pasha reclining as a young boy?
You're on the road. It's 7-Eleven. You're driving. And you're having hankering, you know, you remember those good old days in the shtetl and hankering for the half sour, and 7-Eleven delivers. No, I always thought the one food engineering feat that is the sign that we are all doomed. Look, I don't have a problem with McDonald's selling a pork sandwich and calling it the McRib.
Right.
But the fact that it is shaped like a rack of ribs.
Yes.
It is boneless, but it is shaped like bones.
Yeah.
I think that proves that we are failed and we are a people, our soul is poisoned.
What about
Jesus Christ?
What about
have
chicken?
Some pride,
what about chicken?
Humanity.
Chicken tenders that are in the shape of dinosaurs. I think that's extremely
confusing.
I'm okay with
that.
It's confusing.
But no, who thinks they're eating a little tiny dinosaur?
I don't.
It's the idea that you're biting into what looks like a rack of ribs.
I hear you.
And it's not a rack. Like, why did they shape it that way?
However, the thing is, every time I eat a chicken tender that's shaped like a dinosaur,
how many times have you eaten those?
Well, granted, that's a fair question, and it's been a good long time probably, but it always makes
you think.
I don't
think they existed when we were children.
I wish, it's like, I want to taste a stegosaurus. I want to eat Dimetrodon meat. And it's like, all this is doing is taunting me that I can't get any closer to this delicious extinct pleasure. It's the taste of the creozoic. I invented an age, you know what I mean?
You Creozoic?
Yeah.
Okay. You are, wow, we are.
Stay with me here. Stay with me.
I don't think dinosaur-shaped chicken nuggets exist when we were kids. Remember, chicken nuggets were still new. McDonald's introduced chicken McNuggets in like 1982 or something.
So maybe I have like generational FOMO. Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah.
I mean, chicken nuggets were still the rare thing when we were a child.
Yeah.
I mean, you could get them frozen, but that, you know.
I don't think there was actually.
They hadn't reached a level where they thought of shaping them in.
There was no. The ball. Yeah, there was no chicken in the chicken nugget either. It was some other strange format.
Yeah, chicken, well, chicken scented nugget product food item. Yeah.
Who am I talking to, by the way?
My name is Noah Tarno. I'm the founder and the senior quizmaster of The Big Quiz Thing, the trivia game show spectacular. Welcome to our show, folks. Hey, you know, we talk about stuff here. We talk about stuff happening in pop culture. We talk about
controversial stuff like this.
Controversial to some extent.
Yeah.
We're getting older and we're trying to keep up. And a lot of topics out there right now. Some are too serious and depressing to approach. Sorry, Mary. We're not going to talk about man versus bear. I just don't think that we'll add anything positive to the conversation in any way whatsoever.
But I appreciate you though, Mary. I appreciate you.
Yes, we do appreciate you. And we're not talking about other more serious topics. Although before the mics went hot, we did. But that's between Bill and me. But instead, we're talking about a movie, a hot movie. I think there's an argument to be made that a lot of this movie's heat is, you know, a balm in our stormy times. So people are throwing themselves not into seeing this movie, but tweeting, talking, TikToking, Xing, Friendstering about this film. It is called Challengers.
Challengers.
A 2024 movie, Challengers, directed by, am I going to pronounce this right, Luca Guadagnino?
Perfect.
And I thought that was a woman at first, but Luca's a man.
Yeah.
Where's he from? Is he Italian?
He's Ital, yes, from the boot.
He's Italian. And Bill, you're the movie guy here. Tell us all about Challengers.
So Challengers is a feature film directed by Italian superstar director Luca Guadagnino, as Noah just said. It is written by a man named Justin Kuritsky's in his debut screenwriting effort. Also notable, the score is by Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross, a superstar duo that have been putting together high-profile soundtracks and scores for movies going back to things like the David Fincher stuff, like Social Network, was just it was an act of God what they did. It was an incredible soundtrack.
Screen score. That's a technical term, screen score soundtrack.
Yes. So the cast
SSS
features primarily, one of the reasons why we're talking about this, it features Zendaya in her first lead role, is what is being thought of, at least. I mean, she's been in movies for a good couple of years now, TV star. But this is, you know, she has said...
Zendaya or Zendaya? I thought it was Zendaya.
No, Daya. It's D-A. Like, Zendaya. It's Zendaya, okay. Yeah. If you want to be pedantic, Zendaya Coleman, right? That's her last name. She doesn't go by it. She's a mononym at this point.
She's just Zendaya. Her official birth name is Zendaya Coleman.
Yeah.
Gary Coleman was her dad, right?
Gary Coleman was your second cousin, Gary Coleman. Yeah. It was, again, by her own attestation, she's opening a film by herself, unadorned by either Spider-Man or Paul Atreides, which is a new thing for her. She's had a pretty good run on screen so far, being part of gigantic franchises, but she's got some juice, some charisma. We'll get into it. This movie co-stars a young Faye man by the name of Mike Faced, who's a very Mulaney-like faced presence, is what I noticed from him. A blonde actor who played Riff in the Steven Spielberg West Side Story, most likely, which I did not see that, but people recognize him.
But I love West Side Story. You gotta really fuck up West Side Story to make me not like it.
I guess they haven't done that yet. And he's
the they have, but Steven Spielberg didn't. Let me just say that.
The third, there's a tripartite cast. The third is another young man named Josh O'Connor. Is he Britishman doing an American accent? You know, there were some tells every now and then. He blew it every now and then with his A's. He really couldn't get his A's. However, he's a compelling actor. Anyway, I
know him from The Crown.
Yes, yes. I don't know him because he has very limited. This is his break in American culture. He has a bunch of. I mean, he's young. He's only like 31 or so. He has got a bunch of like English credits. Yeah, baby. Yeah, Prince Charles in The Crown. Was it the one with what's their name? The blonde actor who played Emma Corrin, who played Diana that season, I believe. He was the pair.
Yeah, that's the last season I watched.
Yeah.
But he played Charles for, you know, the Olivia Colman seasons.
Okay. Because I know Dominic West.
I could be forgetting.
Dominic West is playing old man.
Yes. Dominic West is old. So he plays like young, you know, young adult.
Yeah. The wedding. You know, the wedding.
Dating to, Camilla pre-Diana.
Yeah. The wedding to. Okay. Charles, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So
he meets Diana. He's the guy who meets Diana.
For all intents and purposes, the plot to this movie is fairly straightforward, although it's in the telling. In the editing, where this becomes a truly dynamic feature. Not that that's ever been done, not that this has never been done before, but it's the specificity and the execution of Guadagnino that is different. So the three leads here play budding tennis stars who intersect with each other at a US Open tournament heat, sort of on the lower rungs of qualifiers for Arthur Ashe, US Open in New York. Zendaya's character, Tashi Duncan, is the most credible star among the three of them, but they're sort of circling professionally, knowing what they're doing. The two boys are longtime bunkmates. They already have a pre-existing relationship from tennis boarding school. They've been around for their youth, essentially. They grew up being schooled to be tennis freaks. That's their thing. They are talented, but they are juvenile, as you might expect. And they get swept up watching the electric power of Tashi's scorching game. They sort of have a little bit of one of those movie moments where their jaws drop and their eyes open big. It's like they're falling in love with her watching her play the game. You know, the smashing backhands, the serves, and she just tracks and rallies the ball like nobody else. Apparently, you know, she's really on the make. And again, they would say at that point in their career, she's the best tennis player of the three. So the story goes on. They make a move for her, both of them, which results in a racy seduction scene, which is hinted at a trailer if you've seen it. It involves the three kids fooling around in a Flushing Meadows hotel during the course of these heats for Arthur.
I mean,
Ashe.
Have you ever spent a night in a Flushing Meadows hotel? I mean, it's hard to not fool around.
I had house arrest in one for a couple of weeks, believe me.
Okay.
So this dynamic starts a tripartite web of love, sex, secrets, and competition, which unfold over the course of 13 years. And it culminates in a grudge match between the two men in the year 2019. They're in their 30s, older guys, each at different ends of their careers. So Justin Kuritsky's script was on that estimable institution, The Blacklist, which is the unpublished slush pile of scripts that are given a little, Franklin Leonard, I think, sets that up every year. So MGM and Luca Guadagnino scooped this up off the list in 2022. And, you know, as Noah was sort of intimating before, you may likely know Luca Guadagnino from such films as Call Me By Your Name, the Suspiria remake with Dakota Johnson. And most recently, he did a movie called Bones and All, which was just fucking fabulous, but nobody saw it. Timothy Chalamet was in it. It came out 2 years ago during the pandemic. Really, it just got buried, but it was great. Fantastic cannibal movie. Really good horror movie. So this opened on March 26th.
It's a cannibal movie?
It's a cannibal movie. Yes, absolutely. And
it's a horror movie.
It's a coming-of-age cannibal movie, road trip movie. It has a lot of different things going for it, but essentially...
And you said it's good. All right.
Oh, fantastic.
I like modern horror movies when they're good. I will add that to my list.
Yeah, you wouldn't expect it.
Bones and all.
Bones and all. So this movie opened on March 26th. A lot of heat on it owing to Zendaya's involvement. She popped up in New York City at screenings. Our mutual best friend, James Hancock, was there at opening night, and she popped up with the microphone. Her and Mike Faced were there in the crowd, thanking them for all being there, which is pretty cool. You know, I think she did the same thing in Los Angeles and a couple of other venues. She's been running around, really stumping for this thing. And it opened 30 million worldwide. I think 20 million stateside, 10 million international. 30 is a good haul for a movie of this. You know, it couldn't possibly cost that much. So it looks like a vote of confidence for the project from the market. It appears to be loved by both critics and audiences alike, which is a good augur for the film's fortune and most likely Zendaya's future as a lead, you know, a sort of star. You know, we actually have...
This puts her in the A-list.
We have very few stars. One of the comments is that we have very few stars among this cohort. There are, other than like Chalamet, Floor Pugh, and Zendaya.
Floor Pugh. Floor?
Yeah, that's her name. Is we're going to call it that. There are very few actors among this cohort right now who are credible. Like, we're still dealing with Ryan Reynolds and old men who are, you know, men in their 40s and 50s are still the ones leading the way. So we need younger stars to come in, like, take up the reins. Anyway, this was my pitch to Noah because, first of all, it's a movie. Yes, a movie is my favorite intake of culture. It's getting a lot of buzz. There's a good chance you've probably seen posters.
It's getting a lot of buzz.
It was supposed to come out maybe like six or eight months ago, but they pushed it now to when everybody can see it.
Delayed by the strike.
It's a sexy-ass movie, man. So what'd you think, Noah? What'd you think when you went to see Alamo Drafthouse? What was your findings?
Yes, I went to the Alamo Drafthouse Mission here in San Francisco. I thought it was very good. I thought this is a near excellent movie. I thought, you know, the jumbled time structure, I mean, you said it's unique or different. I mean, I feel like we've seen that in a lot of movies. You know, so many movies ripped off Pulp Fiction with that.
Yeah. We actually oversee it. Yeah, always, I agree with you.
Right. And that doesn't always work, but I thought it worked quite well here. And, you know, it had the risk of not working because it's the same three characters, right? Basically, I mean, those three characters take up 90% of the movie, probably. But somehow they made, you know, at first I'm like, how is Zendaya old enough to have a three-year-old kid or whatever? But, you know, they justified it. They made it work. It especially suited the story here because it was really important to give us a slow reveal of these relationships. You know, at the very beginning, it starts, you know, during that climactic, I was about to say boxing match, tennis game between Patrick and Art. And then I thought it was very clever and entertaining how they flash back and you learn about, you know, the past between these guys. And piece by piece by piece, you learn about the intricacies of the various relationships among these three people. I thought that was well done, and Guadagnino handled that in a very deft manner. I thought the acting was excellent. I thought all three of them gave great performances, particularly Josh O'Connor. I thought he was really superb. I don't know if in my perfect world Zendaya's A-list, but she's definitely a talented actor, whatever you want to call her, and you know, I want to see her in more stuff. She's quite good. There are heavy emotional stakes in this movie, and for the most part, they're very convincing about the emotional stakes. There was a missing piece for me in that I thought it was a little telling instead of showing about the attraction between the, and we're going to do spoilers here, folks, sorry, the stubborn, never-ending attraction between Patrick and Tashi. I thought that wasn't quite as justified as I wanted, but, you know, I'm nitpicking there. The aspect that's gotten probably the most buzz here, certainly the most, I mean, this is being very talked about on social media, is the homoeroticism that, you know, Art and Patrick, old friends, and there's definitely hints of it. You know, I mean, I don't want to say too much, but there's, you know, without crossing the line into like they actually have sex, and the quiet moments of them getting closer to each other. There's a moment where they share a churro and people are really, you know, alighting onto that. As a
yeah.
I thought the two men played it very well. You believe these emotional stakes. And these are complex characters in many respects. Like there's debate over whether they were good people, whether they're bad people, who's a hero, who's a villain. Well, I think they're all three of them are heroes. I think all three of them are villains. I think all three of them are flawed people. All three of them are perfectly fine people. You know what I mean? And that is a juicy role for any actor. You know, why did we fall in love with Tony Soprano, right? And all those anti-heroes of prestige TV, Don Draper, Walter White, whatever. And, you know, this is a version of that, you know, evolved 20 years later, whatever. And they do it very well. I liked the tennis action. A funny thing about me is I don't like watching sports, but I like sports movies because my theory is always, well, a sports movie makes sure it's the exciting moments of sports, right?
Yeah, it's just a pickup. Sure, I hear you.
Right. It's like why I watch pro wrestling. They just give you sports, but they cut out the boring shit, right? So I thought the tennis scenes, especially the climax at the end, really well done to give you a sense of drama and excitement and edginess.
Yeah, it hides the digital stuff, you know, like the balls kind of like shooting at the camera. It really
just at the end, though. I thought that was very deft that they didn't do that till the end.
Yeah,
and
it's impressive that stuff is hidden in there, you know.
Very well done. Look, here's my biggest criticism: everyone's talking about how sexy this movie is. I didn't think it was that sexy. There are a couple moments that are kind of hot, and, you know, looking at Zendaya in her underwear is not something that I find unpleasant, but just people are talking about how it's so sexy and is the hottest movie ever, and I'm like, I don't know. I mean, it teases you a bit, but, like, come on. Like, you know, the threesome scene everyone talks about is powerful, but A, it's very brief. It doesn't get to the point you really want if you're watching something, you know, because you want something sexy, and there's no shame in that. It just, it's well done, but to say it's like super sexy is like, just, I don't know. I think that's, you've been in a convent if you think this is a sexy
thing. Or your kink may vary. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Well, speaking of kink, we'll get to that in the why thing. Another sort of criticism I have, actually more about the discourse about it than the movie itself. And then people talk a lot about the score. You mentioned the score. It's Trent Reznor, Nine Inch Nails, and Atticus. Was Atticus Ross, did he play with him in Nine Inch Nails, or they just do movie stuff?
Yeah, that I don't know. I don't think they were part of NIN together. I think that they picked that up later.
But Reznor, you know, God, I remember in college, the woman I had a crush on who worshipped Trent Reznor. Oh my God.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I didn't like the score. I thought it sounded, you know, it was very electronica. It sounded like stuff in a club. Which is fine. I heard, I read a quote from Trent Reznor, who he said the thing he had in mind was unending homoerotic desire. Like, he wanted the score to hint at the homoeroticism, which is fair and is smart, but that's why it sounds like something you'd hear in a cheesy dance club, which it just doesn't appeal to me. I just thought it sounded tinky and weird at certain points. Really weird comparison. Like, I was reminded of like Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood and that weird tinky music that would play during it. I always thought it was kind of weird, just random. I also thought the sound mixing in the movie was awful. I had a lot of trouble understanding too much of the dialogue. And I think some of it was drowned out by the score. So if I watch this again, which I might because I enjoyed it at home, I would watch it with the subtitles for sure. But you know, those are nitpicks. This is a quite good movie.
I love this in spite of my antipathy towards two things. Tennis. I never understood tennis as a sport, especially as a spectator sport.
Even though you dress like a guy who's hanging out at the US Open all weekend.
The irony, isn't it? Oh, how about that? Tennis, I'm sure, is fun to play if you can play it, if that's your thing. But to watch it, just it seems like death on a stick to me. I can't imagine. You know, like shooting it the way you say.
But this is my point. They make it exciting here, don't they?
Yeah, that's the point. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And the other thing I really, you know, if you've listened to me for 6 seconds in the show, I have an absolute distaste and loathing for pretty actor casting. And to be fair, you can't get any prettier than these two boys. I mean, all three of them. You know, but yeah, it's like, I haven't seen those two actors before. Zendaya, I have seen, and you know, I've already been familiarized with her work. But they're pretty, 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 pretty boys. One of them is a very soft-faced elfin. Again, he looks like hardcore Mulaney. His face is almost surreal. Faced plays hard.
Okay, yeah. That's good.
Yeah, thank you. He face looks like he was built in a Frankenstein chop shop, you know, in an earnest effort to sort of design the most fey-looking musical theater creature in existence. And yes, he was a musical theater actor. He was in Newsies on Broadway. Apparently this guy is, you know, he's muscular, he's lithe, but he's also sort of hairless and elfin. He looks a little bit like he could have been Orlando Bloom's cousin in Lord of the Rings. You know, there's something about that. But you know, again, but I could forget about all that shit. Guadagnino fucking directs the shit out of this thing. I mean, all the stuff you're talking about, the time, it's not just chopping up your edit. It's telling your story in such a way that you give the reason for screwing up your time. The reveals come at it. Like, there's a reveal in the final tennis match that kind of winds up being the climax of the movie. I'm not going to say what it is, but when you sort of don't know that it's coming and you sort of see it coming and you realize, oh shit, this thing that they dropped, in no exaggeration, the first 20 minutes of the movie comes back for what is essentially the emotional climax of the film. It's fucked up.
It was very, very smart. Yeah. Yes.
It's not, you know, and you don't see people using the edit stuff, like all that post Sally Menke's Tarantino edit stuff that really became cliche. You don't see people using it to great effect. People use it to screw with your head, but not to tell the best story that you can tell. And I think this movie kind of just plows right through that, you know? The things that Noah talked about already, those aren't necessarily spoilers so much as they're still just parameters of the movie. I don't think those give away any, the whole thing you're talking about, the sexy scene. I don't think he gave anything away. It's stakes, it's parameters. There's still so many delights to see, yet to see in the movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. Well, but you know, some people are crazy about the shit. Like, they don't want, like, I pissed someone off once by telling them that, you know, when the next season of Mad Men, Peggy comes back, even though she quits at the end of the last season. Like, of course she comes back. She's one of the fucking stars of the show. There are people who are very sensitive to spoilers. And,
like, you said to me, Khan does not, in fact, get his revenge.
This is Zendaya like you've never seen her before. Unfortunately, my only skill in life is hitting a ball with a racket.
So it's definitely being talked about. I mean, go on Twitter, go on TikTok. You know, it's hot. So why? Why this movie?
Well, I think Zendaya counts for quite a bit. She's one of the only real young stars we have at the moment. With how fractured studio filmmaking has become and how the cultural monoculture has just, you know, dissolved into a billion shards of glass as if you hit a car window with a hockey stick and ran away from it. You know, I think the other part that's really important is that, honestly, yeah, these young people fuck. I mean, this movie is a horny film. It is horny. Ironically, there's no female nudity. The nudity is male nudity, which, I mean, for what it's worth...
You see a few penises, yeah. You see a handful of cocks. You see no tits and no
exactly.
Tits,
yes. Yeah, no, that's the thing. But it's like, you know what? Just the idea, the languid hanging of dong and the steams and the shower scenes and stuff like
languid
that.
Languid hanging of dong. Dongs,
yes. That is a...
That's got to be like... That phrase, you got to use that for something, man. Language,
well, it's a big, you know what? It's still a big deal. Like you said, this is a major studio. Well, this is an indie movie with A-listers on it. It's got a lot of talk. But the fact is that you can't go into most films and see a lot of dong hanging around. There's not a lot of schwants hanging around movies. And this is a
we
gay
saw.
Director.
Hey, we talked about that movie, that TV show, Sex Life. Remember that? You got enough. You got enough dong weenus. In there to last you a good long time.
There's definitely some weenus in that one too. Yeah. So the
we
thing
saw
is,
one
what,
particular wiener in that. Yeah.
Guadagnino is gay, if you weren't already aware. I think Call Me By Your Name should have told you that if you hadn't already seen that. So, I mean, I think his work is kind of textually or subtextually about the delicious tension of sex. This idea that, you know, dudes kissing or in this one, was there a scene where they actually kind of tapped dongs? I don't know. Like there's some of the shower room scenes where the guys
I don't remember dong tapping.
I'm just talking about what I wish was there, you know. But there's again the homoeroticism of again. I don't know what it looks like to me is that there's this delicious tension, this freighted sort of gay sexuality in the movie, where the idea that you want two straight boys to kiss, like that's part of the game of seduction that's happening. This three-way scene again, that's not quite the three-way scene you're thinking in your head, but I get the impression that. That's the sexy part that doesn't work on us, but that's what like a lot of women want to see. A lot of gay dudes.
Women. That's a good point.
Yeah, they want
not sexy to us, but it might be sexy to women.
You want to watch the tension of like two dudes kind of like closing a deal, like they haven't. Yeah. Anyway, again, I'm killing it by describing it, but sure enough, it's there. All this stuff is in there. So the thing, look, the target audience, all the Zoomers and the Gen Zers and all these people, the younger generations who like don't go to see movies technically. Look, this is like. Pushed towards them. This movie is for them. These actors are there. These themes are there. And like, they're the ones that have this well-renowned puritanical outlook, this sort of anti-sex, anti-nudity thing where people are just talking about sex scenes don't advance the plot and all this sort of bullshit that people have gone on through for a while.
Who cares?
Yeah, who gives a fuck? But it's like, I think the popularity of this is like, this is supposed to put some juice in there where it's like, let's get some sex into the movies again. Let's make movies for grown-ups because it's not all Sonic the fucking Hedgehog or Deadpool or The Minions or whatever kids are being infantilized for watching. It's like, this is supposed to be a graduation. You grow up into watching. This is fucking Risky Business for us in 83. This is like the first tits you see.
Better than Risky Business.
It's way better. I mean,
it's better than Risky Business, but Risky Business was a way hotter movie.
And Risky Business.
Risky Business was hot for men. It was from a male fantasy, and you could argue this is a female fantasy.
It was a graduation, exactly. But it was also Risky Business is a great movie, still holds up. Anyway,
really?
So tell me why do you think it's popular?
I just remember watching Risky Business when I was too young to watch it. You know, at first I'm like, I'm not sure why this is popular. I mean, maybe it's hot people doing hot things, but I'm like, it's not that hot. But you bring up a good point. I think this on average, this is probably hotter to women than men. And, you know, after decades and decades of sex in movies being from a male point of view, like let's get it from the point of view of half the people in the world. So, you know, maybe that's it. Maybe it's a super hot movie to many, many people, just not me. There's something in the discourse that minorly annoys me is people are using a word that I don't think applies here. And that word is polyamory. And they're saying, you know, polyamory's hot now, and there's a lot of think pieces about it, and, you know, people are embracing that. I know a lot of poly people, and, you know, it's just, but I'm in the Bay Area, but, like, I don't know, polyamory is a hot topic now. This movie's not about polyamory. You know, people are saying, oh, this movie's popular because it's talking about something on everyone's mind. There is a love triangle among the three of them. There is a love web. There's certainly a lot of homoeroticism between the two. Polyamory, right, is polyamory would make sense if the married couple also, you know, if Zendaya was, I'm sorry, spoiler alert, started like openly seeing Patrick while she's married to Art, or, you know, while she was dating Patrick earlier, openly also seeing Art. You know, that's what polyamory is. It's a lifestyle, it's a habit, it's a way of organizing your life. It's not once almost having a threesome and three people who want one another and it's causing them pain. So that leads me to people say it's a popular movie because it gets at that hot topic. I don't buy it. Also, you said this, you know, the younger generations are uptight and sexually closeted in many ways. And I agree with that. Can't say I blame them, but it seems to me this movie that's like barely sexy, again, from my point of view, take that asterisk, you know, something barely sexy is super going to turn people on because it takes, you know, they're living in a metaphorical monastery, and something that just pushes the, you know, there's no real sex in Marvel movies or Minions movies, right? So this just like just a little bit of sex drives people nuts. Like when you're a little boy and you see a boob and it's the hottest thing you've ever seen in your life. People are going nuts over that churro scene, and it's a great scene. And there are so many great moments that hint at the homoeroticism between the two guys, but they never quite, they break the seal for a couple seconds, but not in the way you kind of expect them to if everyone's talking about this so much. So I think it's popular because people, doesn't take much to get them going.
Wait, are you on Facebook?
What?
He's asking for your number, and so am I.
You both want my number?
Very much so, yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, I'm not a homewrecker.
We don't live together.
No, would you have liked this sexy, horny-ass movie with dongs if you were a kid?
Sexy, horny-ass movie? Would you say the hanging of dongs?
Languid hanging of dongs.
Languid hanging of dong. The dong, singular, gives it more a poetic feel. Dong is a concept, not dongs as things.
We're in the age of dong.
Big debate once in college when we were playing Boggle, and my then roommate Mark wrote down the word dong. And, you know, we had the rule, like, you had to know what the word meant. And he's like from ding dong or like a penis. And we looked up in the dictionary, and dong is like a former form of currency in some Asian country. So we debated over whether he should get the point for dong. I don't remember what we arrived at. I might have. I mean, I like it now, and I might like it more if I were more sexually. I don't know. We're accusing these kids of stuff that's not necessarily true. Yeah, I mean, I might like it more because it's got a young mindset, I think, for the most part. I mean, how old is Luca Guadagnino? Is he older than us?
Yeah, he's almost 60. He's somewhere between 55 he's almost 60. And 60, I think, yeah.
Okay, but the screenwriter is probably like 25 or something, right?
I think he's in his mid-30s. I think Kurski's is in his mid-30s.
Okay. Well, anyway, I think this movie has a young mindset. So if I were younger, I like it now. I'd probably, in some respect, like it even more. How about you?
No, I think that the tennis aspect, you know, it's not just the sport idea, but the idea that, like, you know, tennis is to me like golf. I had a chip on my shoulder about these sports when I was a high school age because I thought that they were very kind of Tweety Waspy games. Tennis and golf hadn't been, I mean, look, golf, I think to some degree still has not been democratized. I mean, Tiger Woods showed you the image of a black man playing golf. That was only in the late 90s. And that did something different to say, it's not all the world of, you know, Jack Nicklaus's and Arnold Palmer's essentially a white bread.
Right. There's also rich black guys, not just rich white guys.
There's also rich black guys too. Yeah. And tennis, you know, like the kind of people who I went to high school with who played tennis were more well-heeled upper middle-class people or definitely firmly middle-class people.
Tennis was very trendy back then. Very trendy.
I mean, it was. And I just think the idea of like the short tennis skirts and girls and the sort of tennis sweaters and all that shit, you know, like you need a certain amount of money to start tennis. Like you need money you just can't begin playing tennis unless you have an investment of cash in membership dues. Yes. And
there are tennis courts. There aren't like the kids who play basketball on the streets. They're not playing tennis on the streets.
Right. You know, that's you get that. I mean, look, maybe things have changed. We're not talking about the late 80s anymore. But, you know, that definitely would have kept me out. You know, it's not only that. It's not that. But you know, and to going back to the thing, Noah, the idea of the delicious tension, the sort of homoerotic tension. I mean, that stuff is, I observe it. I notice that it's happening. It's a flavor, but it doesn't titillate me. I note that it's there. I see what's, I don't get any excitement from it. I know what it's supposed to serve, but it's not my flavor of, it's not exactly.
You're so far beyond that. You need the hardest of hardcore pornography to get even the slightest bit titillated. I know you, man. You're beyond the pale.
So we would spend about 4 hours every day in the morning just training. And then we would spend the rest of the afternoon just being in rehearsal in the studio with Luca Guadagnino, the director, and Justin Skoriskis, who is the screenplay writer.
Is the success of Challengers in any way a sign of the apocalypse?
I think the opposite, actually, because, you know, I really want to stand on the sexy pervy aspect of this movie as many more times as I possibly can get away with over the course of this. Look, even with the lack of nudity, or I should say the dearth of nudity, because there's definitely nudity. And again, I think seeing a couple of wangs counts for more than seeing boobs. Although there's a boob desert now. There's really not a lot of toplessness, female toplessness, the way there used to be. It's a boob desert. Yeah, it's a tit desert. So, it, you know, like in a movie like this, to see a locker room filled with schwang, uncut schwang, is a bigger deal than just saying, oh, there's some nudity. It's kind of the type of nudity it's showing is provocative. You know, it's... And, you know, again, what's the outright sex? It's like there's kind of no real outright sex either. But again, there's a delicious yo-yoing of like, are we going to see sex? And, you know, spoiler alert, kind of not. On more than one occasion. That's my point. But, you know, look, fair enough. If this is in 1992, you know, and there's boobs and boning and all that stuff, I don't think that the lack of graphic sex and nudity turns down the heat, really, a movie like this. But, like, here's the thing. Let's get sex back. I was going to say, let's get back to sex. Let's get sex back in feature films. And I want to make our movie safe for grown-ups, for grown-up eyes. Again, it can't all be Minions. Like, we need to kind of save the cinema space with something pervy.
Right.
You know, and it's like, there's just the...
I'm not mad at this movie that it didn't have boobs or whatever in it. I'm just...
No. Again,
I'm mad at people for talking about it as if it has...
However it gets the job done, Guadagnino is the right kind of perv. You know, he... Again, Call Me By Your Name had... Timothy Chalamet ejaculates on a peach. And then Armie Hammer comes and eats the peach. Now, you don't see him ejaculating on a peach. You do see the peach. And you see Armie Hammer eat it, and you know that it is covered in male issue. And it's like, that is sexy. That is, there's definitely some
male issue.
Believe it. So what about you? Do you think it's a sign of the apocalypse?
You're just full of the clever turns of phrase today, aren't you? Bill Scurry, wordsmith of the ages. Male issue, languid hanging of dong, etc. I'm going to say this is a sign of the apocalypse, because if this is considered, and again, fine, you can argue, and I'm seeing it from the male point of view, fine, this is my opinion. If this is considered Heat, if this is considered something, the height of sexy, you know, I've seen headlines, the sexiest movie ever, like, get the fuck out of here. If this is considered what's sexy, we are a neutered society. We're fucking halfway to Quakers, you know? This is weak sauce for eroticism. Like, some of the memes out there about, there's one like looking at the seat maps for screenings of this in theaters and like, look, here are two people together, but a lot of groups of three people together. Oh, they're having a throuple. They're going, you know, just like, get the fuck out of here. It's very, other than the languid hanging of dong, it is very standard issue sex in an adult movie, and that we're so used to freaking, you know, Spider-Man and Sonic the Hedgehog and whatever the fuck was in the last Marvel movie that bombed. That
Godzilla X Kong.
Godzilla X Kong is good, man.
I'll take your word for it. I'm not going to say it.
Oh, no. I'm confusing it with the new non-Kong Godzilla movie, which was
Minus One. Yeah, that was excellent.
Yeah, Godzilla Minus One was good. Godzilla Time versus Kong, I didn't finish. So there you go. This is just weak sauce. Like, these are people who get turned, you know, the slightest thing that admits the reality of, you know, most adults you know, remove their clothing and rub up against each other in awkward, you know, exciting ways.
I'm doing it right now.
That drives people. Yeah, somewhere. If that drives people nuts, then we're just really like weak, sad, boring, unexciting, you know, dull people.
The three of them are tied. They have this kind of invisible pull between the three of them. And the whole film is really them dealing with the grief of not being together.
We're going to bring this thing home with our last two segments. The first of which is about envy. Is there anything about this movie or the phenomenon that makes you feel jealousy?
Well, I never was an athlete. I'm always jealous of people who...
You never had the makings of a varsity athlete.
Never had the makings of a varsity athlete. Bill, today, when we're done, I'm going to go to the gym and it is going to mark 20th, something like that. I could do the math, consecutive day I've gone to the gym.
Jesus.
I know. I haven't been this fit since I was doing Taekwondo in 2005. Yeah.
Jesus, man.
So there you go. I'm on my way to being starting being a tennis pro at 48.
It's you laying around and pumping iron with Schwarzenegger, smoking reefer on the ground of the thing.
Exactly.
It's like I'm calming. I'm lifting weights. It's like I'm calming.
Women on my shoulders. It's a comedy. I'm lifting weights. Look at you. You're so flabby. But I do wish, you know, all things like this. I wish I was young. I wish I understood this discourse. I saw a tweet. I swear to God, it's a picture of a guy with like a thoughtful look on his face. And here's the text. I copied this. Some QTS whacking Thomas, but between him and the challengers, men he is clearing. The fuck does that mean?
Did you feed some Dutch into Google Translate and that's what it gave it back to you as?
Like, people under, and it had like 8,000 retweets. Like, I'm supposed to understand that? Like, I just, you know, we're old. Get the fuck off my lawn. Is QTS quotes? I don't know.
I don't know.
Whacking QTS, Thomas, yeah. But between him and the challenger's men, he is clearing.
To I don't play understand, us out?
Like, what
to
parts
play us
of
out?
Speech half those words are.
I don't
yeah,
know what
it's
means.
Ridiculous. Anyway, so yeah, I wish I understood the world anymore, but I don't because I'm 1,000 years old.
I wish I was carved out of alabaster like this Mike-faced guy, a fucking actor so conventionally pretty that he invites...
His eyes are too far apart.
He's
a good actor. He's a great actor.
Invites your very punching of his pulchritudinous face. But look, that's just jealousy, Noah. That's just jealousy because I'm so close to death. I am on life support. I'm over here waiting for a donor organ or many donor organs. And I've never once in my life, even if I went to the gym for 20 days in a row like you do right now, And you can't see everybody, but Noah's lifting up his shirt and doing that abdominal ripple. It's amazing. I didn't know he could do that between this phone call and the last one. But I've never looked like...
I'm grating Parmesan cheese on my abs.
Have never looked anything like these two dudes, and I have never pulled a chick with the heat of Zendaya in the middle of all that. But Noah, let's then close it out with the...
Wait. Serious question. Serious question. Do you think Zendaya... Because there's a line when they first meet her, like, she's the most beautiful woman in the world. You think Zendaya is a beautiful woman?
Oh, yeah, she's definitely a beautiful woman. I think that is, you know, I would say empirical, but that's ridiculous to say it. I think that she, she checks a lot of boxes off for sure. And this movie actually had a lot to do with it because I looked at her differently because, again, this is junior high school graduation for an actor who's played a lot of kids so far. This is, I mean, granted, I'd say Dune 2 was great. She's doing something different. This is her lead. She looks like a full quote-unquote woman, and it is a different thing. And I'm permitted to look at her differently now. She's entered a different pantheon. Where is she on the scale, huh?
Does she have a famous boyfriend or husband?
Yeah, she's Tom Holland. She's hooked up with Spider-Man. That's their thing. Their real-life thing.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe is that the Thomas in some quotes, whacking Thomas, but between, no, I don't think so.
Oh, Tom Holland? It could,
She and Spider-Man are actually a couple. Okay.
And she's from Oaktown, her parents live closer to you already, so you can sort of work on them on the back end. Yeah.
I knew she was from here when I specifically had to do a quiz for a group that wanted material on people of color from the Bay Area, particularly Oakland. I had a Zendaya question. I think something like Coleman is the real last name, blah, blah, blah. Okay. Felonian scale. I went back. We don't really look at that many movies, but I went back to a movie I was vaguely reminded of here because it seemed very young. I didn't quite understand it. And it's trying to be sexy, but it didn't hit me in the loins. And that's Zola. Remember Zola?
Yeah, it was a good one. It was a nice little indie movie. Yeah.
Yeah. You multiply Zola by, because we're talking about sports here, pickleball. Right? Which is, you know, a mutation of tennis.
Speaking of pickles.
Then sure. I subtracted something I thought was, I mean, I like this more than that. Perfectly good, but seemed more aimed towards women. So there's a level I'm never going to quite get it that way. And that's Adele.
Yes.
And then you add 4.328. So on the multi-pronged graph paper 3D imagery axes of all the topics we've looked at,
yes,
you would find Zola times pickleball minus Adele plus 4.328. You arrive at challengers.
When I computed for the cosecant, then it all became apparent. I understand now.
It's easy to forget that.
This is one of my favorites of 2024 thus far. I mean, that's not saying much because it's only the beginning of May. However, you know, I think I have three or four of my movies I've seen so far. I start compiling my list as I see the movies. I add them into the permanent record for the year. So the thing, what I want to do is comp this with something that excited me, something like this early in a best of list cycle, comparably in some previous epoch. A thing we talked about that, you know what, it wasn't the greatest thing in the universe, but by the time I saw it, I thought, oh, this is going to be like the greatest thing. And maybe it got overlapped by some talented things afterwards. But for some reason, my enthusiasm is reminding me a little bit of Donald Glover going way back. That was, I recorded, this was the 20th of May, 2018. So it's almost a couple of years, almost 4 years back. We talked about Donald Glover. I don't even know where he's at these days. I guess he did that TV show. 6 years
back. It's 2018. It's 6 years back.
Oh, sorry. I'm thinking of inverting numbers in my head. I'm so Dutch. Yes. Yeah. So the thing is, it's like, I really like Donald Glover. He's not the greatest thing I've ever seen. And I give him, I give his work a pass, or at least I take a look at it. It's never the best stuff, but I always want to see more of it. And it's like this movie right now, I have a feeling it could get lapped by things I see that I like better as the year goes on. But for right now, I'm very bullish. On 4th of May, Saturday, the year of our Lord, 2024, I'm very bullish on it at the moment, and I'm happy to go out on that right now. So if you want to see past episodes of this show, as we barrel down to episode 300, 300, that's the amount of red blood cells I have left in my body right now. Look for past episodes on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, Google Play. Tweet to us at Noah and Bill Show if you're still using Twitter. Slum it with us, will you? Talk to us, say anything. Write to us at noahandbilldontgetit@gmail.com. Email, what a quaint thing, and yet we still use it. Give us a review on the aggregators. That's how people, that's how you turn the algorithm in our favors, by giving us heat. I am on Twitter personally, at William Scurry. I am on YouTube, youtube.com/AmCaesar. I'm on Insta, I'm on all the stuff. Anything other than maybe TikTok, I just don't play that game. And here's Noah, he'll tell you all about his TikTok channel right now.
I have a TikTok channel, but I haven't posted on it in the longest time, so don't go there. Where you can go is bigquizthing.com, all about the big quiz thing, America's finest source of corporate and private, live and virtual and hybrid trivia events, booking heavily for the summer. New York fans, we just booked a rare public event. We're teaming once again with Hudson River Park Trust to do a science themed quiz all the way on their science center on the river there, on the Hudson River. It's good. I got information here. We literally just booked it yesterday. So it's going to happen, I believe, August 15th. More on that soon. But, you know, hire us for your events. Big, small. We do them all. I'm also at Instagram, The Noah Tarno, from time to time.
Okay, everybody. So to the next episode, where we talk about a movie that features a love rhombus in the sexy world of curling in the year 1989.
We don't get it.
An American Caesar Enterprises production, 2024.